citizens traveling that distance together. With Manju Venkat, this is Smita Ramanathan saying goodbye from Bangalore, India. We thank Varun Venkat for editorial support. Thank you for listening.
To hear Wings programs again, find some of our most recent editions at wingsradio.org/wordpress. Warm thanks to all our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, WERU-FM, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose work can be found on the website gifteconomy.com. That's gift-economy.com. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Wings series producer, Frida Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, also heard at translator K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM and translator K282BH in Philomath at 104.3 FM. And we're streaming at the top of our lungs on www.kboo.fm. Thanks for tuning in.
Are you ever listening to a new pop song or reminiscing over an old, well-loved album, and you catch a melody or a lick that reminds you of a different album altogether? Next thing you know, you're reading about the profound influence of synthesizers on rock and roll? Well then join me, Katie Zip, for Double Groove, a genre-bending show where we'll take a deep dive into an album, exploring the influences, history, and take a few quirky turns, all for maximum enjoyment and understanding of the music we love. Every second Friday of the month, 8 to 10 p.m., it's Double Groove with Katie Zip, only on your community radio station, KBOO, on 90.7 FM.
Hello, and welcome to All My Greatest Teachers Showed Me Love. And this week we have a guest, Julio Appling, a music teacher, among other things, and bassist. So I am just really excited to dive in, and thanks for joining All My Greatest Teachers Show Me Love, found here only on KBOO Portland.
Listen to this song for a minute, and you know what you gotta do. See yourself in the mirror, realize there's nobody like you. Push yourself to the limit, no matter what you are going through. So start your day and be a winner, make your dreams come true. The things can getting worse, 'cause the world becomes a better place to live a life, so no regret. Stand alone, don't be afraid, listen to your heart and stay. Stand alone, don't be afraid, listen to your heart and stay. Stay. yourself more and more. And you're getting to know yourself much better. See, the sun is a new hope. So let's start your day just like you're born. Every day, every day.
And that was For a Minute by Enda and Reza. Julio, thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely.
Let's dive in. Where did you grow up?
So I was born in Bakersfield, California, but I was only there for about a year and a half, so it doesn't really count. I grew up in Tacoma, Washington. Lakewood, Tacoma, became a city, I think, in 1997. So basically South Tacoma, Washington. I lived there entirely until college. So then I was in Redlands for 4 years at the University of Redlands, then Bowling Green in the Midwest, 3 years, and that's why I still have a Midwest phone number, even though I was only there for 3 years. The greater Portland area since 2009, but specifically right. Vancouver.
Yeah, so still a Washingtonian.
Yeah, couldn't get rid of it.
Well, that's fun. I'm also from the greater Seattle area.
Oh, cool.
Well, neat. Let's break for a song. I thought High Road by Sir Woman. And you're listening to All My Greatest Teacher Showed Me Love, found here on KBOO Portland.
I could write it off, babe. You could make it all okay. I could say you're wrong, you could walk away. Was it something she said? Maybe something he did. I could play along, look the other way. If there's something, baby, you should let them all know. It's not giving in when you're letting go. If you're thinking about taking the high road, I can tell you that you're doing it wrong. Something, baby, you should let them all know. It's not giving in when you're letting go. If you're thinking about taking the high road, I can tell you that you're doing it wrong. There's a better way of letting it all go. 'Cause you've been running from this feeling too long. It's that simple, baby. You should let them all know. It's not giving in when you're letting go. If you're thinking about taking the high road, I can tell you that you're doing it wrong.
Sierra by Sir Woman. Julio, what is your occupation?
So I have two jobs, I guess, or two careers, two halves of my own career in training and documentation. I worked in that field for about 15 years, first at Clark College in Vancouver. I had decided not to go the academic music route, honestly, because I saw the kind of passion and focus people had to have to succeed in academia, and I respected that, and I knew I didn't have it, or at least not at that point. Especially like tenure track position comes up in rural Wyoming, which I don't know if there's any other Wyoming. You gotta go there.
But, yeah.
And that's the kind of commitment people have to that kind of profession. Mm-hmm. And I moved back to the Northwest with a band, the student loan string band who I was with and had met in the Midwest. And so
I just love that name. Yeah. I have to pause. Student loan string band.
Yes. I was with them for 10 years. We started out in Bowling Green. We were all three grad students and an undergrad, and we all met out there. I had just gotten engaged. Well, I'm going to move back to the Northwest because my wife's from Palm Springs, and she is not going to move to the Midwest. That's not a sell. And they were like, well, we want to move to somewhere else. They threw out Portland, and I was like, okay. But anyway, so long story short, that's how I ended up in the Northwest, wanting to find another kind of college-type job. It was an environment I was used to, so I ended up getting a job as a trainer. Specifically just teaching instructors how to use the podium in the front of the class. That was my part-time job at Clark College. I did that for about 2 years, and I enjoyed it. I transitioned from that into educational technology. I got a job at Lewis and Clark College, and I was there for 10 years.
So yeah. Helping people, you say, at the podium.
Oh,
so
yeah.
With...
So that was basically, at Clark, it was very focused. I'm helping people learn this specific skill. They get the key to the podium after they see me. It kind of was an entry point for me into educational technology. I was interested in that also because as a grad student, a lot of what I was doing presentations. And for me, presentation and having to like read something that I was very, a lot of times, you know, academic papers are very difficult to read. And so it was always a challenge for me to kind of like, okay, well, what am I supposed to do with this?
And make it engaging.
Yeah, and make it engaging. Having to learn it with the express purpose of teaching it to others suddenly gave me like this, oh, that's what I'm supposed to do with this. And having to read it through the lens of I have to explain this or I have to present this really changed for me my approach to basically handling information. Having to explain it to others suddenly gave it a sense of like, oh, okay, it added a whole like dimension to taking in the information and how I'm supposed to take it in, what am I supposed to do with it, oh, I have to turn this into objectives. So basically, all that to say, that's got me really interested in the education and technology. Basically integrate technology into their classes. In most cases, they come to you with a lot of ideas and a lot of tools right off the bat. Mm-hmm. And the first question we always end up asking is like, well, okay, cool. What do you want to do? What are you trying to do? As part of having that position and working with instructors, you have to really develop a framework for how you're going to handle all these different types of requests.
Right. Or like, I was imagining standing in front of the projector.
Exactly. And yeah, I mean, it's true. Like they'll tell you like kind of what they have in mind, and then between what we have available, what they're capable of reasonably, and what their objectives are, we kind of plan it. And then in the last 3 years, I think in 2022, I switched to OHSU, where I'm specifically just doing training and documentation. That really came about from, you know, after 10 years of working in educational technology, kind of finally developing my own ideas kind of about how I wanted to handle training and such. And so, yeah, I got to be in one department because IT at OHSU is massive. Like, the IT department is, like, 900 people at OHSU. And, you know, at Lewis and Clark, the IT department is, like, 25 people.
Yeah,
and so...
It's a big difference.
I always tell people, like, there's more people in the IT department at OHSU than there are, like, employees at Lewis and Clark. So I'm just in one division, and I just kind of get the opportunity to do it my way. If it's a dumpster fire, it's my dumpster fire. And, you know, yeah, so it was a chance to kind of... take what I had learned and the experience I had and then kind of try to see if I have my own way of doing it.
Yeah, I love that. Let's break for a song. Let's try A New Man by Joy Kilsar. And you're listening to All My Greatest Teachers Show Me Love with our special guest, Julio.
Such a yearning in me at your side.
Was New Man by Joy Kills Sorrow. Julio, do you have a special teacher or mentor who significantly shaped who you are today?
I've had a lot of teachers, and the one now, at least for the most key, I was going to a private Catholic school growing up, and there was a teacher, Sister Therese was her name, and yes, she was a nun.
Oh, those sisters, yeah. Gotta watch out for them.
She was the music, she was the elementary music teacher, which is like, you had to take a music class before fourth grade, and then in fourth grade you got to take band. So I knew her as the music teacher, and then she also taught piano. When I switched to her, she was much more chill. I think it's going to be really strict with a nun or something, but no, she was actually really chill and really cool. And she assigned me these pieces that were just fun and goofy. And like they, you know, I remember there was one called Computer Printout, and like there was one, had these stories to go with them. And the biggest thing about it is the music was easier compared to what I had been working on with my previous instructor, where just a lot more straightforward, a lot more goofy, a lot more fun. But what was, I think, important about, I was having fun and I was learning songs quicker. And I had stuff to play. People would be like, oh, play me a song. And I'd be like, oh yeah, I know this song. I didn't realize how important it was playing music that I enjoyed quickly, and I was learning in the orbit of where you're comfortable in a way of just like, okay, learn this song. I didn't know the song. I had to read the, I had to decipher the music. And this was, of course, this was before the internet. So I couldn't just go online and just hear the song. Spend time deciphering the song or try to remember how it sounded from when I took the lesson. And it was just a lot of work. And then with this class, you know, I was like, oh, these are a lot easier and I can just learn these songs. And I ended up having a really good time.
And sounded like, too, just building confidence.
Yeah, building confidence was huge.
Being playful.
And then eventually I switched to another teacher that was more strict and lost a lot of that. But
you had sounded like you had the foundation of it still living in
you. It stayed kind of latent for a while. But yeah. I forgot to mention the class. I took all this experience basically both between my job and between being a musician, and at the beginning of COVID, during when we were in quarantine, I was working from home. I didn't have any gigs. I'd been really super busy, so actually having no gigs was really nice. And so I was like, oh, I have all this time to practice. Yeah, I just was struggling, because much like the, you know, learning how I learned out, I had not really done that with practice.
Applying it
to my own self.
Passion.
Yeah. I had, you know, spent all this time developing these frameworks for working in educational technology and working in training, and I had spent all this time as a musician playing, but I had never thought to combine the two. And a lot of times people would ask, like, oh, you know, do you teach bass? And I'm like, oh, I didn't really learn in a very organized way. Very true. I learned primarily through performing. So you end up spending a lot of time later on, like, fixing things that you didn't fix when you should have. Oh, this would make this way easier. I wish I knew this 5 years ago. Basically, I turned all that experience eventually into a class. I call it Rehearsal 101, Unpacking Musical Practice. Mm-hmm. I've been fortunate enough to be able to run it through over at Artichoke Music for the last about year and a half.
Okay. And a local music school.
Yeah. I've had it there for a little bit. This coming February, I'll be teaching it at PCC, Community Education Course, on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Starting February 4th, it's going to run 3 sessions.
All right, let's break for another song. How about Norwegian Dictionary by Joel Smith? And you're listening to All My Greatest Teachers Show Me Love on KBOO Portland.
Chips to the Chevrolets, and they wouldn't want any other way, saying let alone. And the fishermen on the old fjords bring the kids with them to the ocean floor, fill them full of Nordic lore, saying this is your home, this is your home, this is your home. Didn't take too long. Everybody feels everybody.
And we're back, and that was Norwegian Dictionary by Joel Smith. Julio, did your dreams change from the time you left high school? If so, was it a dramatic change from what you thought you really wanted to do?
Yeah. Largely because I didn't know what I wanted to do when I left high school and was transitioning to college. You know, I enjoyed math. In retrospect, I wish I'd focused more on languages. I think music is the closest to bilingual I am, really. You know, yeah, and I'm still later in life trying to take up language. But yeah, I didn't understand really what I wanted to do. I dabbled in writing and theater, like I took creative writing courses. Graduate school was where I really kind of figured out. Because learning something well enough to teach it was kind of, yeah, that was my first reliable learning framework. And I think that suddenly found that intersection of what I enjoyed and what I was good at. In a lot of ways, that's what we're looking for, is that kind of, you know, something that we're good at, something we enjoy, and something that makes money, and just see where that all intersects.
Yeah. Yeah. That is what it's about, right?
And what ended up being helpful for me was finding a way of engaging it that matched with my way of engaging the way, you know, my own framework, my own personal framework of how I work with things. And one of those eventually became one that I hold kind of dear for training these days is every time, you know, look for where you're uncomfortable and engage that.
Right. Lean in.
Yeah. Lean into where you're uncomfortable. And so
I love that.
You know, and because I, you know, I very much think in a very kind of asynchronous way, you know, I'm always thinking about the end and whether it's, you know, my own mortality, but also just, you know, I'm always stressing about things that are happening next week and next month. And as opposed to kind of letting that stress just kind of sit there and paralyze me, because I was always a procrastinator. Now it becomes, you know, every time I think about something and there's a little bit of discomfort there, think about how I can lean into it. If I'm worried about my own mortality, cool. Well, I'm alive right now. What am I going to do? What can I do right now that will engage that? Am I wanting to find something that I can do right now that I can invest time into that's meaningful?
Yeah.
But even on a smaller scale, like if I have a show as a musician and I'm really nervous about this show that's coming up, you know, being honest with myself and saying, okay, well, what is it? Can you not play it? Do you not know the music? What is, and that eventually kind of leans into that same framework of that's going to tell you what you need to work on. People ask, like, what do I need to practice? How do you know what to practice? They're like, you know what to practice. Yeah. If you think about being on stage and you think about what you're worried about, mm-hmm. and where the source of your anxiety is.
Maybe feeling weaker or less prepared.
Exactly.
And so let's,
And, you know, for song, and I remember one of the cool things about being in a band for 10 years was you eventually get some, you get so worn in on songs that there's stuff, I didn't worry about going on stage. You know, we had played so many of these songs so many times and I could just go on stage and have fun.
Yeah.
And because I wasn't worried about how I was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think thinking far along down the lines, you know, forces me to kind of just say, okay, let's go back to what's my objective.
Yeah.
You know, for practice, it's be comfortable on stage.
Ooh.
Have a simple objective. When it gets any bigger than that, whether it's family, life, mental health, work, you know, try to go back to as simple as an objective as I can and then say, okay, what do I need to engage to be able to better focus on that objective?
It's so interesting. You kind of already answered the next question, which is, right, how do you mitigate stress and anxiety? And it sounds like you've kind of built a platform for your anxiety.
Yeah. It's basically not being afraid to engage it. And because anxiety, nervousness, confidence, there's this tendency for it to just be this kind of amorphous, undefined fear.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the things I've had to do is like, okay, what if I actually write it down, what it is? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of usefulness to just writing something down and, you know, but also to have to make it like, to really define it. And in most cases, honestly, you know, once you write it down, it becomes simpler and it becomes easier to handle, but I have to take the time to engage it.
Yeah. Whew. Well, let's pause for a song here. Everything Put Together by Paul Simon. You're listening to All My Greatest Teachers Showed Me Love on KBOO Portland.
Paraphernalia never hides your bruise. broken bones. And I don't know why you'd want to try. It's plain to see you're on your own. I ain't blind, no. Some folks are crazy, others walk that borderline. Watch what you're doing, taking downs to get off to sleep, and ups to start you on your way. After a while, they'll change your style. See it happening every day. Ooh, spare your heart. Everything put together sooner or later falls apart, and there's nothing to it, nothing to it. You can cry and you can lie. For all the good it'll do ya, you can die. But when it's done, the police come and they lay you down for dead. Ooh, just remember what I said.
And that was Everything Put Together by Paul Simon. And Julio, I was really struck by your, sounds like your relationship with your anxiety. Every show we do something called a mindful moment, which is a tip or tool. And this week, you kind of gave me a soft landing into when you feel the anxiety or the spiraling thoughts. A tool that really works for me is asking, am I going to worry about this in 5 minutes? Am I going to worry about this in 5 days? Am I going to worry about this in 5 months or 5 years? And a lot of times when you kind of, for me, it's kind of that bird's eye view. I back up and I look at this. Hey, am I going to worry about this in 5 minutes? 5 weeks, 5 months, I mean, you get the dish, 5 years. Mm-hmm. And just really, it shrinks the importance or the immediacy that sometimes anxiety can fuel. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a back way in kind of through logic of like, Zan, what are you doing right now, right? So that's my little tool for today. Nice. Is the next time you really find yourself spiraling, you know, obviously I'm a big advocate for doing something after you catch yourself in anxiety, not just continue thinking, but doing something physically, but in that transition going, am I going to worry about this? Like I say, in 5 minutes. So that's my tip. And so Julio, I'm really curious about, what's the most exotic place you've traveled to? And is there a country on your bucket list?
I didn't travel much growing up. And I didn't really have a real sense of adventure for travel. Mm-hmm. It was, I don't know, just not something that I did or thought about, really.
Yeah.
I did have the opportunity to travel overseas when I was in, like, grade school. There was, like, this, like, student ambassador program. And I think I did, like, 3 weeks in Europe, and it was, like, sixth grade. As much as I want to say that was meaningful, like, I guess it was, but I don't remember a lot of it. And it was just kind of a quick little whirlwind thing. But so I didn't actually have the opportunity to think again about international travel until I was with, I mentioned the Student Loan String Band, who I think we actually were on KBOO and talked about this tour But yeah, we did the American Music Abroad program back in 2010, and then we ended up doing multiple tours with that program. And then that took me to places that I never even just imagined I would ever go, like over the course of multiple tours with the group. I went to the first tour, we went to Southeast Asia. And so we did Thailand, Myanmar, Vietnam, Indonesia, which is where I met Inda and Reza, and Fiji and Samoa, all in about 5 weeks. And it was wild. And then also on another tour, we did South America, which included Venezuela, Argentina, Dominican Republic. We also, the very last one I did with American Music Abroad with the group, we went to Russia in 2016.
Wow.
And
you have been all over the world. And, look at you go.
And yeah, and it was amazing. And
all through music and art.
And
that's inspiring.
And a lot of people always, the first question they ask is, you know, with American Music Abroad, you know, oh, what do they tell you to say? And I'm like, you know, I have no doubts in my mind that the government at the time had reasons to go to the places that we were.
Yeah, there's a diplomatic element, right? Of course.
We didn't have to do anything.
Like, bridging peace.
Yes, we were just there to be musical ambassadors. We did our workshops, we played our music. I'm sure whatever the government was doing there, they did. We got to do workshops and concerts. And, you know, I think it was that first one in Southeast Asia was like 5 weeks. And I think there was 2 days out of those whole 5 weeks that we had no travel and no concerts.
Wow.
It was a really wild time. We got to actually just play music, meet people, and we had pretty much entirely good experiences, honestly. Like, people asked about, oh, was it weird here? Was it weird here?
People are people.
People are people. And, you know, and that was the other inspiring thing, is just seeing here, oh, this place, you know, they're going through this, and people would just persevere.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people want to live and people want to enjoy life. They want to create. That was what I think the common element in everywhere we went is just seeing people endure and seeing people do find ways to carve out the life they want in spite of whatever is happening.
Gosh, how about where we're at,
right?
In this country, right?
Exactly. And I think it was amazing. And so having done all that, and I think, now thinking about my own bucket list, I would like to go back to Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. I've always been a fan of music and media from Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. I was an anime fan when I was younger. I got into music from a lot of video games and anime when I was younger, and that got me into bands and Japanese rock bands. Mm-hmm. And then also, as you know, later my wife and I were both into K-dramas. She more so than me, but then I also got into K-pop.
Those Korean soap operas,
oh,
right?
Oh my God. Great. And so then I got into K-pop from having studied music history and musicology. You know, I'm not going to dive in and try to provide some kind of analysis of music that I haven't really done the proper research on. I'm just going to say I love it and I enjoy it. I would like to, there's an extra step of actually being there where the music comes from and what you can learn from that. Yeah, I think it'd be great. And I'm also a big fan of the food. I mean, food, music, media. I mean, that's...
You're sold.
Yeah, I'm sold. It's great. So yeah, I'd love to go to South Korea and Japan.
Fun. Well, let's break for a song. Let's do One Day by KT Tunstall.
Yeah.
Cool. And you're listening to All My Greatest Teachers Show Me Love on KBOO Portland.
2, 3, 4.
Don't change, they stay the same.
we're back, and that was One Day by K.T. Tunstall. And you guys didn't get the behind the scenes. Julio knows many of these artists and introduced me to many of the songs we're playing today. K.T. is a...
not one of the ones I know. I wish I knew K.T. Tunstall.
Yeah, you're right. But that you saw her perform, and she's just very
I've seen
thick.
K.T. Scottish singer-songwriter, and yeah, she's awesome. Puts on an amazing show. I think I saw her with just a drummer. She was just a, it was her looping. She was doing her looping pedal, guitar, and vocals. And then she had just a drummer with her. K.T. Tunstall is great. Enda and Risa I met in Indonesia during one of our American Music Abroad trips. We even actually went back to play. We did a weekend trip to Indonesia.
Wow.
To play, which is a horrible idea, let me tell you that. But we had an amazing show with them. And then I also actually was fortunate enough, after almost over a decade, I traveled down to the NAMM show in Anaheim last January to see them, because they were over playing at NAMM stateside. And I was like, So I went down there and saw them play in a hotel lobby that I soon realized. I was like, oh, I didn't actually need to buy tickets to NAMM to go to this hotel lobby. But whatever. I still am happy I went there, and it was great.
Yeah.
And then Joel, I knew from college. He was a student at the University of Redlands. His senior project was an album. That was one of my first recording credits was River Roads by Joel Smith.
That's so
and
neat.
He's an amazing, amazing singer-songwriter based in Spokane.
So, Julio, if you'd be so kind to share a time when you faced a challenge and how you overcame it. And then what did you feel motivated you through the uncomfortable process of change?
So, you know, it started out with basically, you know, me saying, hey, I've got time, quarantine, I'm at home, I can just practice. And it very much reflected everything that I'd kind of been instilled by my experience as a musician, which was sit down, put a timer on, 30 minutes, make sure you practice every day, you know, run your scales, work on this stuff. Mm-hmm. I tried to do that and failed. And, you know, I would try to practice and, oh, I'm going to practice every day at 6 o'clock and get the bass out and everything. It just wasn't taking off and it wasn't working. And so eventually kind of went to everything on my experience, which was like, oh, okay, well, maybe I'll talk to other teachers and talk to other experts. Again, a very academic approach at this, and read some books on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was useful. And actually everything that I talked to some really great musicians, peers that I knew, teachers, and, you know, I was like, hey, I'm, you know, researching, you know, I'm trying to figure out how to practice and, you know, what can I learn about it? And I did all that research and it was very useful and I learned some great things. But in the end, I was realizing, like, I have a framework, the one, you know, I already talked about, you know, working in training.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things about working in training is my job is to basically, you know, in a lot of cases working in IT training, you know, I learn from the engineers or the experts, and then I basically work on documentation or put together a presentation to present it to people who don't have the expertise.
Mm-hmm.
And my job depends on the person learning the thing. You know, knowing that I have this framework that I have to use, I'm like, well, what can I use it for myself? On myself, on something that I already know how to do, I already know how to perform.
Yeah.
So how do I basically turn that framework on myself? You know, it was, I realized that, you know, even just from the very beginning of, well, what's the first thing I do if I'm trying to train somebody on a new software application, or when they come out in as a, you know, for to see me as an educational technologist and they're a professor, what's the first question I ask? What are you trying to do?
Objective.
What's your objective? 5 words or less, honestly. I had a colleague at Lewis and Clark, Elizabeth Young, who, you know, she would tell me, oh yeah, I have ADHD, I have to be very, and I eventually learned I'm neurodivergent, I also have ADHD. And
me as well.
Yep. And so one of the things that she had said was like, hey, you know, when I do a presentation, you know, title, 5 words, no more than 5 bullet points, no more than 5 words per line.
Mm-hmm.
And so it became kind of a way of focusing and saying, you know, so that whole thing of initially when I thought of what's my goal for practice, it was, well, I don't want to ever step on stage again and think, I hope this goes well. And so I had to shorten that eventually to be confident on stage.
Yeah.
And once I had that, then it was just like, well, that's the end goal. Be confident on stage. Mm-hmm. And so then all of those questions of what should I practice? How should I practice? Mm-hmm. Well, that all basically is informed between where I am now mm-hmm. and where do I want to get to? Yeah. And I can just, everything that I do, I can ask myself, does this contribute to that goal? How does this contribute to that goal? Sometimes it's indirect, sometimes it's direct, but suddenly, you know, that changed a lot of,
it's like, things become essential. Like, what's the essence of what I'm going for?
My
mind's whirling too, because it feeds again back into the anxiety of sometimes, you know, I've recently had a client and they were really kind of spiraling about hosting a party. And, you know, I let them vent as you do. And they said, okay, well, what's the objective? And she kind of didn't get the question at first. And then it was, we arrived at make people feel welcome.
5 words, less.
Right, right. And you're like, suddenly, you know, it feels lighter in the room. Because all those worries of like, am I going to get everything done? Comes down to the moment of like, hi, welcome. Can I get you, right?
Yeah.
It's just, relax, basically.
And you know, it even for me, it changed my approach because, like, I realized it really hit home how I'm not a linear thinker, a linear worker. It's hard, you know, people would say, oh, just write an outline. But having to start, you know, okay, this is the beginning, and, you know, try to kind of work it through, you know, it actually, outlines still are helpful, but I think of it, that word that I keep using, framework, rather than outline, because it starts with just kind of naming your objective, and then like I work kind of iteratively, which means instead of, you know, working at the beginning and trying to work to the end, just saying, okay, let me think about this whole presentation, this whole song, whatever, you know, let me listen to myself play this. And, you know, practice is an opportunity to engage that performance that you have to do 2 weeks from now. So I can turn on the video recorder, watch myself play, and I can say, okay, let's say that was the performance on stage. Regardless of how many things that I think that, you know, oh, I didn't do that right, I didn't do that right, what's one thing that I can fix? And fix that one thing, and then do it again. And, you know, as opposed to constantly, you know, thinking about this ambiguous, oh, I'm not playing it well, I'm not playing it good enough, I'm not playing this, one thing at a time. One thing at a time.
All right, let's break for a song. Sure. I love Me Versus Me by Otis Jr. and Dr. Dundiff. You're listening to All My Greatest Teachers Show Me Love on KBOO Portland.
Falling short, but not falling for the same mistakes I made before. Tied my own hands behind my own back, tied the blindfold on my own head. My laces down and told myself I'd cover ground. And I wonder why I do this to myself when it all could be so easy. And my life ain't worth the time that I got left if I never make it pleasing. And I'm seeing now and always in my head all the problems I was facing. Take a look at all the habits I was fed. Taking time now to erase them. And I feel like sometimes somebody's after me. And I turn around and it's just me I see. Yeah, I feel like sometimes somebody's after me. Waking up is kinda tough. I'm coming but I'm feeling sluggish. Give me time to adjust my eyes. A minute and I'll be just fine. Loosen that grip from myself. I looked around and took my first step. Felt so good I might take a stroll. Now stretch my legs, see the outside. And I
wonder why I do this to myself, when it all could be so easy. And my life ain't worth the time that I got left, if I never make it pleasing. And I'm seeing now, always in my head, all the problems I was facing. Took a look at all the habits I was fed, taking time now to erase them. And I feel like sometimes somebody's after me, and I turn around and it's just me I see. Yeah, I feel like sometimes somebody's after me, and this fight of life is just me versus me.
And that was Me Versus Me by Otis Jr. and Dr. Dandiff. Julio, thanks for joining us and kind of wrapping up here. How do you maintain a sense of purpose and fulfillment in your life?
I always ask myself why I'm doing things.
Yeah.
ADHD, inattentive. And I mention that not because that has any intrinsic meaning. That can mean a lot of things to a lot of different people. Diagnosis can mean a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
But what it means for me is it gives me a way of understanding how my own brain works. And for me, what that's meant more than anything is if I don't understand why I'm doing something, I can't expect I'm going to remember it.
Yeah.
It's why I've always struggled with names, because there's nothing more arbitrary than a name. Having to just remember this is the person's name to go with, just, you know, there's no logic behind it. It just comes from experience. And so having to understand why and, you know, suddenly engage, find a way of connecting that information, giving it context and connecting it to me, that is really the core of it. And even if something doesn't have a direct connection to me, that doesn't mean I'm just going to disregard it. That just gives me a different way to engage it. It gives me a different angle. Having to always stop and just say, what are we doing here? And why are we doing this?
So any advice that you would give your younger self?
Figure out how you learn.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of my academic career, elementary school, junior high school, college, getting by. And just kind of trying to figure out, what do I need to do to pass this class? What do I need to do to do? What hoops do I need to jump through?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until probably my, late 20s, early 30s that I started really being critical of, what do I actually do to understand something? And again, in grad school, having to actually, I'm presenting this, and this is how, and then suddenly I had, this is how I learn stuff. This is how I build that context. And that being with intention and being able to understand, this is why this is happening, and this is why you're learning this, and this is the outcome that we want. Yeah, and you can learn from anything you do well. If you are into Legos, if you're into video games, looking at, what does it take to get good at that? Strategies are you using to engage it? And honestly, most importantly, how do you enjoy it? How do you have fun?
Yeah. So much comes down to that. Speaking of objectives, having fun, playing,
and
maybe reach someone with it. Connect.
Give it meaning to somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Figure out how you learn, what it takes to get you to connect with what's in front of you, because it's going to be essential in finding out what kind of work you want to do, how you want to spend your time, how you want to spend your life.
Yes.
Is understanding this is how I connect with this, and this is how I create urgency and how I create meaning. Figure out how you learn.
Yeah, and just to plug one more time before we leave, starting February...
Yes, February 4th at PCC. I'm going to be PCC Cascade. I'm going to be teaching Rehearsal 101, Unpacking Practice. It's going to be 3 consecutive Wednesdays. You can search for the class. It's a part of PCC Community Ed. Okay. I'm pretty sure if you just go on Google and type 101 Unpacking Practice, PCC, it'll come up.
And then we also have a show page on kboo.org, and we'll put all this information there. Thanks again for joining us. Oh, this is such a fun interview. I'm contemplating how I'm going to learn my bass. Thank you so much for joining us on All My Greatest Teachers Showed Me Love. And be kind to yourself and others out there. Take care.